started, told you we had an important announcement. I am so glad there are other people in the body of Christ that are aware of crucial issues affecting our society, because I, you know, with traveling and kids and everything else, I'm sometimes not aware of these crucial things. And this was actually brought to my attention about, 10, 12 days ago, when one of our church members said, tomorrow's the big day. And I thought through all of the possible things that were happening that next day, could not think of anything important when he informed me about that this information was going to be released to the public. And it has been officially released now, so I want to read you this year's list of approved fried foods for the Texas State Fair. I thought this would be a great introduction for Matt. So there is chicken fried cactus bites. And the interesting thing about that is that it is served with a... What's that? Yeah. Well, it's served with a combination of sweet and spicy secret jalapeno ranch sauce and agave nectar dipping sauce. So that's got to be good. Then there's the deep fried divine chocolate tres leches cake. Deep fried jambalaya. Here's possibly the worst thing on the menu, because this sounds like a coronary waiting to happen. A deep-fried mac and cheese slider. And this one, I'm pretty sure Richard must have suggested, because it is a fried bacon cinnamon roll. I got to read the description. Deliciously fresh cinnamon roll dipped in a special sweet pancake batter, rolled in crispy fried bacon crumbles, deep-fried and sprinkled with powdered sugar. Wow. That's just bad. Fried Mexican firecrackers, a fried pork wing, and a picnic on a stick, which is basically chicken, tater tots, slices of dill pickle, repeated three times, then dipped in batter, rolled in breadcrumbs, and fried until golden brown. So for all of you who are planning on going to the state fair, you now know what you have to look forward to. And we're so thankful for the individual who, you look happy. Your husband's going to talk about health, and you're back there applauding. My goodness, there are going to be problems at that household tonight. Anyway, so looking forward to Matt bringing his presentation on moving your meat, and I'm sure this will be beneficial. I saw several things, even though Matt and I have been working out together for quite a while, just interesting points that I hadn't really paid too much attention to. So this will be a blessing to you. So Matt, go ahead and come on.
Good afternoon, everybody, and thanks for staying for the afternoon service. I want to encourage everyone to ask questions if you have them. I'm going to just really generally cover the basics of fitness and exercise, or exercise and nutrition. So if you have any questions at the end, just save them and remember them. So first, let's start off by advancing to the next slide. All right. Well, this is the very well known Bible verse that compares your body to a temple. Do you not know that your body is a temple of the Holy Spirit who is in you, whom you have received from God? You are not your own. So this is basically saying that your body is a temple, not only in spirit, but physically. Your body is the physical blessing that God has given you, and we are to all be good stewards of God's blessings. And you could also go as far as to remember several occasions in the New Testament when Jesus goes into the temple, and there are things that are going on there that shouldn't be going on. And he actually cleanses the temple. Some people believe that it happens once. Some people believe that it happens twice. But this is symbolic of how we need to cleanse our temple and make sure that everything that's going on is glorifying God, and everything that's going on is working to better your ministry. So, our human body is a perfect machine. We do not understand it fully. The human genome has been mapped 100%, but only 5% understood. So this is what scientists will tell you. There was a huge genome project that went on in the 90s, and they said that they mapped in the entire DNA sequence of the humans, but they only came up with sense, making sense with 5% of it. 95% is junk DNA. So that's just going into saying that we basically understand probably about 5% is what is actually going on in the human body. So critical points regarding the human body, diet, and whenever I say diet, guys, I'm not talking about like going on Jenny Craig or Weight Watchers or anything like that. A diet is when you change the way that you eat. A diet could be, if I want to be a bodybuilder, then I go on a diet and I eat 5,000 calories a day and go to Whataburger five times a day. A diet could also be I kick out all the animal products from my diet. So a diet is just any modification. So diet and exercise work together to address the true source of bad health. Using either diet or exercise alone will be much less effective than using both together. So, so if you want to lose weight or get stronger, if you just exercise, you're going to enjoy just minimal success. And if you just use diet, you're going to enjoy just minimal success. They both belong together. Okay, so this is the calorie restriction trap, and this is a patented graphic that I made in MS Paint last night. So this is basically a demonstration of what yo-yo dieting does. On the left side over here, this is the ideal, and over here this is if things go wrong. But up here on the top, you see the symptom is you have too much fat. Next, the prescription normally if you're trying to lose weight is to eat fewer calories. So in the ideal way, you lose weight. Next, keep it up, keep starving because you have more weight to lose. And what happens is your muscle, you lose muscle and your metabolism slows down. Now let's look on the other side. You eat fewer calories but didn't lose weight. The next logical progression is, hey, you must still be eating too much, so eat even less. The next thing that happens is metabolic slowdown due to muscle loss, and it's the same on both sides of the spectrum here. So the next logical progression is you return to a normal lifestyle because either you did or you didn't achieve the weight loss. And then since your metabolism slowed down, you gain the weight back because your metabolism slowed down due to starvation. Then you go all the way back up to the top. So that's what yo-yo dieting is. Basically, when you don't take in enough calories, your body sloughs off fat as well as lean muscle mass. And that slows your metabolism, thus feeding the disparity further. So let's look at some guidelines for exercise. And this is where I get real general as far as I don't get into real specific types of exercise, and I want you guys to ask questions if you have them. First, you need the goal of each workout, and when I say workout, I mean each time you set out to do exercise is to set a new record. So if you walk for 30 minutes and you walk 10 blocks in 30 minutes, the next workout, you're trying to walk a block and a half in 30 minutes. The next point is find something that you enjoy doing. And this is very important because if you don't enjoy what you're doing for exercise, you're probably not going to do it for very long. And that's where most people fall off on their exercise programs is they commit to doing something and they make a very concerted effort towards it. But if it's a chore and you don't enjoy it, you're probably not going to do it. And exercise and good nutrition needs to be part of your lifestyle. It doesn't need to be something that you do temporarily to obtain a temporary goal. Third is you must sweat. Nobody likes to sweat. And I hear it a lot when I sit down and talk to people and do fitness assessments. A lot of people say, well, I don't like to sweat. That's really too bad because nobody likes to sweat. Not even the guys, the big huge guys in the gym who are always sweating. Nobody likes to sweat, but we like sweating is a good sign that you're achieving what you're setting out to do. So then you can associate, if you are sweating, you can associate that with the fact that you're achieving what you set out to do. If you exercise and you don't sweat, there's something wrong. Either you're not hydrated enough or you're not working hard enough. It's either one of those things. So more guidelines for exercise, and this is really as specific as I'm going to get as far as exercise goes. And this is according to the Cooper Institute in Dallas. Dr. Kenneth Cooper is the father of aerobic exercise. You need 120 minutes cumulative exercise weekly. So this means you need to go do exercise three times for 40 minutes at a time, or four times 30 minutes at a time in a 7-day week period. Exercise must be challenging enough to elicit adaptation from your body. So basically, if you are in shape enough that walking for 30 minutes at a time isn't challenging, then your body's actually not going to have to change. So what you do for exercise has to be challenging for your body. You have to demand more of your body than it's capable of. Otherwise, it doesn't have any reason to change. You need to achieve the minimum effective dose. And minimum effective dose, the best example I can give for cardiovascular exercise is the minimum effective dose for cardiovascular exercise, as defined by the Cooper Institute, is 10 minutes of exercise at a time. So if you exercise for any less than 10 minutes, it doesn't really count. As far as I'm concerned, as a professional personal trainer, you cannot do cardio for any less than 20 minutes. Any less than 20 minutes is not meaningful enough to make a change. As far as the minimum effective dose goes for things like weightlifting, say you're trying to gain strength, which all of us should be trying to get stronger, you need to lift weights. You need to lift whatever it is weight that you're doing until you get to failure by the time you're ending your workout. If you, let's say that I have some nice 5.5-pound dumbbells and I'm doing overhead shoulder presses like this, if I've never exercised before and I grab the 2.5 pounds, and I do this 15 times and I do 3 sets of that, and by the end of the third set and I do my 15 and I got a little burning, but that was about it, my body's actually not going to have to change because it was strong enough to achieve that. And what we're doing when we're exercising is you're communicating to your body that it's not strong enough, it's not lean enough, it's not fast enough. And in order to do that, you have to get to the point of failure. And failure is when you get to the last few and you literally cannot do it anymore. Okay, in order to lose weight, increase strength, and become more healthy, you must give your body a reason to change. So that goes to your diet and exercise as well. You must achieve the minimum effective dose. So what is the first step as far as exercise goes? The first step is commit to doing 120 minutes of cumulative exercise weekly. Start out walking. Easy enough. Once you can easily walk 30 minutes continuously, introduce brisk walking intervals. So the best example I can give of this is, you know, you don't have to have a gym membership or have access to a treadmill or any kind of exercise equipment. You can set out on your street and walk for a block, a normal pace, and for the next block you go faster than your normal walking pace. Then the next block you hit, you go back to your normal pace and you recover your heart rate. Then the next block you go faster again. You maintain that for at least 30 minutes. And over time, your body is going to adapt to that, and you actually never need to get to a jog, but you will eventually get to where your rest intervals, you'll be walking faster than your normal pace, and your work intervals, you're going to be walking as fast as you can, like full-on soccer mom mall walk. All right, step number 2, continue to walk 120 minutes per week and seek out other physical activities that you enjoy, especially if you don't particularly enjoy walking. So, who likes walking a lot? Raise your hand if you love walking. All right. there are a good number of people who enjoy walking, and that's awesome. But some people really don't like walking, and I am among you. What I prefer to do is lift heavy things. So if my exercise program was reduced down to just walking, I probably wouldn't be able to maintain my sanity. Cardiovascular exercise is something that I do out of necessity because I have to. It's kind of like a chore. But how I maintain balance in my life is I do those physical things that I enjoy doing. And those physical things that I enjoy doing are lifting really heavy things. So, everybody's different. Some people love to bike. Some people love to climb. Some people love to swim or lift weights in a different way than I do, a different way. That's all great. You just got to find something that you enjoy doing. And I can't emphasize that. I can't overemphasize that, because if whatever you're doing for exercise you don't enjoy, you're going to stop doing it. And this needs to be a lifestyle. Does that make sense? All right, this is the importance of proper nutrition when exercising. So this is basically what happens if you do exercise but your nutrition isn't good. So up here you have work done, minimum effective dose achieved, and next step is muscles are damaged. And before I go any further, the goal of doing exercise is to damage your muscles, because when you damage your muscles, if provided the correct conditions, your body will heal. The correct conditions are good nutrition. So good nutrition, enough rest, enough hydration, all that stuff. Over time, after you exercise, your body is going to adapt to more physical activity and become stronger, become leaner, become faster. So muscle damage is achieved, and that's what we're trying to do. On this side, if you're fed properly, your muscles recover 100.1%, which doesn't sound that great. But if the rate was actually 100.1% per workout, I'd probably weigh about 300 pounds and be a solid muscle. It's not quite that, but 10 workouts later, your strength is improved by 1%, that's huge. Okay, let's look on the other side if you're not fed properly. So muscles are damaged, you're not fed properly. Muscles recover 99.9% of their previous capability. And we'll just move this on. 10 workouts later, physical stress is perceived by the body, and survival mode is initiated. And survival mode is basically where your body perceives that it's not getting the proper nutrition, so it takes everything that you eat and converts it into fat. Not literally everything, but it is going to try to store more fat than anything. So it is possible, yes, that you can work out and actually get gain weight, the wrong kind of weight working out. And sadly, I see that more often than not working out. Okay. So how do you feed yourself properly? The foundation of every meal should be vegetables, preferably green ones. And this next point, which you have probably mostly read by now, is that lettuce doesn't count as a vegetable. And that's probably going to blow a lot of you away. Lettuce, iceberg lettuce, romaine lettuce, all those lettuces, they're basically just cell walls and water. So they don't... Dennis, you got a question? I'm glad you asked about spinach. Spinach is one mite better than lettuce, but it's still inferior to things like green beans or broccoli or snow peas or sweet snap peas and things of that nature, things that you actually have to chew. The easier something is to chew, the less work you have to put into it, the less fiber it has, and actually the less good nutrition it has. So next time you guys sit down for a nice salad, I want you to subtract the lettuce as an ingredient out of that and imagine what you have left on your salad, because it's usually like chicken breast and some croutons and salad dressing and cheese and maybe some tomatoes or a cucumber. And this great meal that you thought that you're having actually is basically doesn't have any vegetables in a meaningful way. So green vegetables, like I just named a whole bunch of them. Any vegetable that you can enjoy, I do green beans most of the time. and I do broccoli whenever I can. And also, while I'm on this subject, fresh vegetables are always better, but the way that they freeze vegetables now, they pick them out of the field and they flash freeze them right away. So as long as you don't cook the heck out of them when you're preparing them, as long as you don't throw them in a pot full of water and boil them for half an hour, they're going to be just about as good as steamed vegetables. So a really good strategy for getting enough vegetables is going to buy some frozen ones at the store, stock your freezer with them, and every time you eat something, break out a couple bags of frozen vegetables and heat them up. All right. Next one is corns, carrots, cauliflower. They are starchy vegetables like potatoes, and they are to be counted as carbohydrates. So another one that I hear is I ate a plate full of vegetables yesterday, and I had corn, and I had carrots, and I had my chicken. And that's basically the same thing as having a big plate of meat and potatoes. All right. The problem with SAD, SAD stands for the Standard American Diet. The SAD diet, Standard American Diet meals, are usually carbohydrate-based, and this is absolutely true if you think about what it is that we eat normally at fast food restaurants. You go to get a burger, it's got a bun, it's got a whole pound of French fries, and you got a little sliver of meat and a couple vegetables, and it's carbohydrate-heavy. All right, this would be awesome if we were building the pyramids or the Great Wall of China, but most of us sit down all day normally. Do not eat carbohydrates if you're not about to do work. So I'll touch on this on the a little bit later, but carbohydrates are what your body prefers to use for fuel. So if you take in carbohydrates, that's really what your body wants to use for fuel. And if you have an overabundance of them in your bloodstream at any given point of the day, your body doesn't have to use your body fat stores for energy at all. It has plenty of carbohydrates to run off of. And more often than not, you've got too many carbohydrates. And if you have too many carbohydrates, then your body will just go ahead and store those as fat. I'm getting a lot of dirty looks. Everything that goes into your body must have a purpose. So you're not eating because you're hungry. You're not eating because you love this food. You're eating because you need it to stay alive. And that's the, our culture and our society and worldwide, I mean, we have so much food that it went from a necessity. You have to eat, your lentils just to stay alive to do the day's work. But now we have so much, we have such an abundance that food is kind of like a hobby. And food is, you can have an unhealthy relationship with food very easily, and probably many of us do. So you need to wrap your brain around the concept that food has a purpose, and everything that you eat has to have a purpose. Okay, so eat carbohydrates for energy to do physical work. So eat carbohydrates for breakfast and lunch if you're going to be active during the day. That's what carbohydrates are for. So if I'm about to hit the field and put up some fence and wrestle some cattle, that's a good reason for me to eat a big old breakfast with eggs and pancakes and sausage. But if you're going to go to the office and sit down all day, you really don't need all those carbohydrates. Okay. Now let's talk about the importance of protein. Protein is a primary building block of all life. In order for your body to change in a positive way, enough protein must be present in your diet. You can have a stellar exercise program and a spotless diet, but if you don't have enough protein, you will not change. I'm going to alienate some people right now and say that women usually don't get enough protein. And men, if you're skinny, you usually don't get enough protein. When I'm talking about protein, I usually am just talking about meat, chicken, lean pork, even beef, eggs, protein powders, which I highly I endorse protein powders wholeheartedly. But endorsing a high protein diet begs me to implore you to drink a lot of water, because with a high protein diet, protein is broken down in your kidneys, and if you don't have enough water, it can be hard on your kidneys. So I'm not saying that you should drink excessive amounts of water. I'm saying if you have a high protein diet, you really need to make sure that you're drinking as much water as you should be. So 1 ounce of water per pound of lean mass per day is basically how much you need. Women have an average of about 100 pounds of lean mass, and men have an average of about 140. And this varies wildly depending on your size. So Uncle Robert has about 180 pounds of lean mass, and that means that he's going to be drinking, about a gallon of water a day plus one of those big 64-ounce cups of water every single day if he's getting enough. And just for reference, a gallon is 128 ounces. So for women, you're drinking almost a gallon of water a day. And that's just baseline. That's not only for high-protein diet. That's for being healthy. Things not to count as protein, and I don't want anyone to feel like I'm singling you out. These are very commonly counted as protein, and they are not. So yogurt, nuts, and cheese are not to be counted as protein. These are high enough in fats, and some of them high enough in carbohydrates that they are anything but protein. Like nuts, for instance, if I have a handful of almonds like this, this is 400 calories of almonds. And most of it comes from fat. These are all very commonly mistaken as protein when they should be counted as fat or carbs. What about fats? Well, fat doesn't actually make you fat. Raise your hand if fat makes you fat. It doesn't. The thing about fats is that fat has 9 calories per gram, whereas protein and carbohydrates have 4 calories per gram. So the thing about fats, the way that we have had an aversion to fat, well, one, it shares the same word with fat, and two, the more fat is present in something, the higher calories it's going to have. But that's not necessarily a bad thing if it's the type of fat that you need. And basically, your body needs every kind of fat that humans don't engineer. So your Crisco and margarine and those kinds of things, those are hydrogenated fats that we take out of vegetables, and we force extra hydrogen molecules so they're saturated. Those are the kinds of things that we don't need, and those are also in the family of trans fats. But I'm probably about to blow some of y'all away here. Saturated fats coming from animals, we used to think those are bad. They're not. They have a good place in your diet, and they help your hormones. They help your testosterone, your estrogen.
But butter is more healthy, a lot healthier than margarine.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that's just come out in the last probably 18 months. And it's pretty likely in the next 5 years we'll have a whole different opinion of it. You know, we've all heard that you shouldn't eat red meat. You should limit red meat as it pertains to cardiovascular disease. But the study that they used to tell us that we shouldn't eat so much red meat, they were comparing the Western culture to the Eastern culture. In the East, they don't eat as much red meat, and their rates of cardiovascular disease are lower. So basically, these scientists with an agenda said, hey, what's different here is that Americans eat a whole lot more red meat than Asians do, so that must be the reason for cardiovascular disease.
Asians eat fresh vegetables.
And they're more active than we are. And, yeah, and they eat fresh vegetables, more organic vegetables, less genetically manipulated vegetables. So these are all things that have perverted our way of thinking, and red meat actually does not cause cardiovascular disease. Okay, let's see where I'm at here. Don't worry about fat-free items at the store. If it says fat-free or low-fat, I'll show you an example at the very end of the slide presentation. It's basically a marketing gimmick. Like, Coca-Cola is fat-free. I don't know why they don't advertise that, but it is. Just because something is fat-free doesn't mean that it's not going to contribute to obesity or diabetes or anything like that. Okay, enough fat will come with an increased protein intake. So if you're eating a lot of fish, a lot of chicken, a lot of meat, you're going to get a lot of fat from those things, and that's just fine. Also, the next thing I'll say is supplement with fish oil. If you're not taking fish oil, it doesn't actually taste like fish. You just swallow it down, and it's okay. Most fish oils these days are made to taste like they are imbued with mint flavor. So even if you do burp it up, it tastes like you swallowed a peppermint instead of you swallowed a salmon head. One other thing I'll say about this fish oil supplementation, and if y'all have anything to write this down on, I really want you to remember this. Omega-3 fatty acids, those are what you need to take. And when you go looking for fish oil supplements, if you see some that say omega-3, 6, and 9, you only need omega-3. Omega-6 and omega-9 fats are very prevalent, over-prevalent in our diets. You don't have to supplement with those. You're already getting enough without even trying. Omega-3 is the one that comes from fish that we don't get enough of. So if you go to a vitamin shop or a GNC or something like that, and you say, hey, I need some fish oil, and they say, hey, we've got this awesome complex supplement. It's got your not only your omega-3s, but your 6s and your 9s. You don't need that. And it's hilarious that they still try to push that stuff, but it's actually an expensive filler in there that they will lead you to believe is a better product. Okay. Let's talk about more guidelines. Don't drink juice, and please don't tar and feather me, but don't drink sweet tea either.
Amen.
Okay. On the level of macronutrients, which is like carbohydrate, protein, and fat, there is no difference between refined flour and whole grain wheat. They are all carbohydrates. The word whole grain on anything does not imbue it with magical healthy properties. So the difference between refined, bleached flour and whole grain wheat, they're the same thing except the whole grain wheat has more vitamins. And that's the difference. So whole wheat, it's kind of like it doesn't have anything less than your refined. It just has, it's like, well, if you're going to have your wheat, you might as well get your vitamins with it. So whole grain pastas, whole grain breads, whole grain cereals, it's epidemic in the stores. If you see whole grain anything, that doesn't make it okay.
You're not helping.
And this is, I mean, we are sadly the embodiment of distorted information. And it's just the way it's gotten to. And it's, if you see something that says heart healthy on it, heart healthy whole grains, the American Heart Association is totally blasphemous as far as healthy stuff goes. They'll lead you to believe that you can eat Cheerios and you're gonna be just fine if you sustain yourself on Cheerios and milk. It's sadly not true. Okay. Now that I've thoroughly depressed everybody. Yes. So let me clarify that one step further. For breakfast, for lunch, if you have activity in the day, then yeah, whole grain wheat, that is a much better choice. But whole grain, the fact that it's whole grain doesn't devoid the fact that it's a carbohydrate. So, all right, right here I have some labels that I picked up from the store. And over here on the left side, we have, you guys might not be able to see that, over here on the left side we have orange juice, and then we have Coca-Cola. And I'll just dictate to you what it says up here. The serving size up here on the orange juice is 8 fluid ounces, and it has 110 calories. The serving size over here on the Coca-Cola is 12 ounces, so that means that the Coca-Cola has 33% more in a serving. So if we add 33% to our orange juice, It actually has 165 calories per serving, and regular full Coke has 140. So orange juice has 15 calories per 12 ounces more than soda. And we all know how bad soda is. Soda is a bad word. Let's look at the sugars. Sugars are 22 grams on the orange juice. And sugars over here on the Coke are 39. Now, if we do our math, in 12 ounces of orange juice, there's 33 grams of sugar, and in Coke, there's 39. So that's the only way that orange juice is better than Coke, because it has a little less sugar. So this is why. What's that? Vitamin C you can supplement. Vitamin C you can get with no caloric expense at all. So, I mean, you can take a vitamin C supplement, and because it's a vitamin, it actually has no caloric value whatsoever. If you regularly sit down to a big old glass of orange juice, and I would submit to you that probably if you're drinking orange juice, you probably don't drink 8 or 12. You drink 16 ounces at least. That's a big insulin spike, unless you're getting like 40 or 50 grams of protein to offset it. And protein reduces the amount of insulin your body releases to metabolize carbohydrates. So you will see all day on this orange juice bottle that it's heart healthy and that it's part of a good diet and all that good stuff. And it really doesn't have much more of a place in your diet than a big old Coke. And this is my last slide, and after this we're just going to be talking and asking questions. But steps to employ today, and these are initially I had the word easy on the beginning of this slide, easy steps to employ, but really none of these things are easy. But these are the foundational ones. So the first thing you need to do is commit to eating more vegetables. The less cooked, the better. And if you're Imagine your plate, like imagine the place that we had for lunch today. The big compartment needs to be full of green beans and green peas and broccoli. The big compartment needs to be full of that. And on the sides here needs to be your various types of protein. That's how your plate should always look. And if you're hungry after that, more vegetables. You shouldn't, if you're trying to lose weight or gain muscle or any of these things, you shouldn't be hungry. If you're hungry, you need to respond to that and eat more. You should never be starving yourself. And if you're never hungry, then that's a whole other side of the spectrum, and you have to force yourself to eat until you do start becoming hungry. One thing I get a lot for breakfast is people will say, well, I don't eat breakfast because I'm not hungry. And it's kind of like, well, I don't eat vegetables because I don't like them. Too bad. Got to eat breakfast. Got to eat vegetables. It's just the way it is. All right. Next one is get 120 minutes of exercise per week. And I use the walking example. If you need more specifics on that, I'll be more than happy to go into that with you. And the next one is don't drink juice, soda, or sweet tea. And the overarching concept behind that last one is you really don't want to drink your calories. If you're like me, I want to taste and chew all of my calories, and I'd rather not drink them. I'd rather have a piece of cake than a cup of orange juice. That's just me. All right. Questions? John? V8. V8 is a little bit better. What you're going to run into with V8 is it says it's like one serving of fruits and vegetables per serving, which actually isn't that much. You just have to be careful about the sugars. So you could use V8 with a meal, but I wouldn't drink it by itself because it has enough sugar that it's also going to spike your insulin. Dennis? Breakfast, my go-to breakfast is a protein shake, and I buy the big vat of protein powder, and they cost about $50 for a 5-pound one, but it comes out to about 60 cents per serving, which is actually pretty good considering how much protein it is. I do 2 scoops of that in water, and I eat an apple. And that's real quick for people who don't have time to eat breakfast. Just wake up, get you a shaker with full of water and a couple ice cubes, put a couple scoops of protein in there and shake it up, and you can eat your apple and drink your protein on the way to work. Bananas are one of the highest on the glycemic index for fruit. So a banana will spike your insulin. And for those who don't know, insulin is a storage hormone. The more you have present in your bloodstream, the more you're going to tend to hang on to fat, and the more insulin resistant you will become. And insulin resistance is a bad thing. But every time that you ingest protein with a carbohydrate, the protein has a blunting effect on your insulin response between 30 and 40%. So taking that protein and eating an apple, even a banana, the protein is going to reduce how much insulin your body needs to move that fruit. So if you like bananas, that's fine. Just also another thing to keep in mind, the huge bananas are about 2 servings of fruit. The medium-sized ones are closer to 1. So a medium-sized piece of fruit and a protein shake. Yes, eggs are really good. Whole eggs are just fine. We used to think that the cholesterol on eggs was so high that you shouldn't eat egg yolks, but as I talked about earlier, fat doesn't make you fat. So eggs are good. Lean meats like chicken, if you have if whoever you're cooking for doesn't have leanness issues, so if they don't need to lose weight, then you can use the higher fat meats such as sausages and things like that. Just need to be careful about how much sodium they have. Any kind of meat. Whole food is always superior to supplements. So if you ever have a chance to eat real meat that you have to chew, it's always superior to taking a protein supplement. But protein supplements are very convenient. Next question.
So with that breakfast, just all protein?
No. I really like fruits for breakfast for carbohydrates because it's going to be a quick response into your body. Cereal is okay. So is oatmeal is okay.
What's a good kind of oatmeal? I know there's some that are more processed and not as
good as a lot of benefits. It really comes down to preference. Steel-cut oats, there are people who swear by them. But they're not really that much different. It's just a different method of processing them once they're removed from the actual plant. So the rolled oats, they'll hydrate them and they take a roll and they just smash them flat, and that's why they're those little ovular shapes. And the steel cut oats, they don't roll them out like that. They just cut them in half, and that way they'll soak up moisture. They take longer to cook. So. Oatmeal is okay. I wouldn't do any more than half a cup prepared. So after it's prepared, half a cup that's enough carbohydrates. Something else, carbohydrate for breakfast, is you could do like a sweet potato. I love sweet potatoes for breakfast. Put some cinnamon on it with some coconut oil and something like that. Arthur? Oranges are fine. Just not orange juice. Because when you drink orange juice, if you drink 12 ounces of orange juice, you're drinking like 3 oranges.
I like
those are just fine. You always, anytime that you eat a fruit, you always need to accompany it with some type of protein just to keep the insulin down. And that's really the name of the game, is we've got to control insulin. Protein bars, you have to be careful about protein bars because a lot of them, especially the red flag on protein bars is if it has chocolate in it. If it has chocolate in it, it's made to taste good rather than be beneficial for you. So, I mean, you can go to GNC and pay $4 for a protein bar. It's covered with chocolate and it tastes delicious and it has 30 grams of protein, but guess what? It's a candy bar with extra protein in it. The only one that I think is okay is really the Clif bars. They have a lot of carbohydrates and they have an okay amount of protein, and they're good if you're on the go and you don't have time to sit down for a meal. They're good in a pinch to pull out and choke one down rather than starving for 4 hours. Timing makes a really big difference. If you can front load your calories towards the beginning of your day, you're going to be a lot better off. And what I mean by that is your breakfast and your lunch should be your biggest meals, which is usually the inverse of what usually happens when we get home from work and when we get in and we're all together as a family. We have our big meal then. The problem presented then is that your body has to process most of the calories and deal with them, and then you go to sleep and you're inactive for a long period of time. And if you can offset that to where you get most of your calories when you still have activity left in your day, that is much better. So for breakfast, you get as big a meal as you can. For lunch, you get a big meal. And then for dinner, you have your protein source, your 5 to 8 ounces of protein, and then fill the rest of the way up with vegetables. And if you're hungry at any point in the night before you go to sleep, you supplement with more protein. You should, going back to not being hungry, you should not go more than 4 hours without eating. You need to eat every 4 hours. If you go longer than that, then it's stressful for your body, and your body will decide to hang on to fat instead of process what it is that you're taking in. Recently, I mean, like I said, I'm giving you all the science up till this point, and the last few years, that's what we've been saying. But studies are now showing that that's not actually superior. There's no magical fat burning power to having 5 meals a day. The big thing is that you don't go into fasting. And fasting occurs after the 4th hour of not eating, and that's really where the 5 or 6 meals a day came from. And it sounds great having 5 or 6 meals a day, but when you actually start trying to do it, it's pretty impractical. You can have lettuce. Just try to put as many vegetables in it as you can, as many other vegetables. So a salad with snap peas and broccoli and just as many vegetables, tomatoes, zucchini, yeah, things like that. As many as you can get in there, and don't offend you with whatever color flavor scheme you're going with for your salad. You could have your traditional salad, but then have a side of additional vegetables. I know. For an evening snack, as long as you're not going crazy on the almonds, like eating half a cup, they're fine, because the fat in almonds will also have a little bit of a blunting effect on the insulin response. So nuts aren't very high on the glycemic index. So if you can get away with eating like 15 or 18 almonds and that satisfies you, then that's just fine. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's fine. For me and my wife, we always have protein powder, and we get the chocolate stuff, and it tastes good enough that it's actually kind of like a treat. So at nighttime, if we're about to go to bed, she gets off work real late, and we're hungry, but you know, we don't want to make a whole big meal, we'll just take a protein shake, and that'll hold us over. And you can get them in a whole lot of different flavors, not just chocolate. Judy?
Talk about lentils and beans. You mentioned them earlier. Talk about how those fit into those.
Lentils and beans are a really good source of carbohydrates, and they have carbohydrates and protein, and they're good for early in the day. So they're kind of like little energy powerhouses. They've got carbohydrates and protein. You don't want them for dinner because you got to count them as a carbohydrate. But lentils are excellent. They're not very common to find in our diet, but they are. You can flavor them like meat, and they kind of take on a meaty texture in what you're eating. And they're a really good way to bolster the protein content of anything that you're having. So they're good for breakfast. They're good for lunch. One of my favorite things to do when I'm taking a lunch to work is I'll get a package of frozen green beans and have my Tupperware container, put all four servings of the green beans in there. Then I'll take some lentils that I cooked the night before that I flavored like I would meat, put those on top of there, and then I'll put my meat on top of that. And that's going to be a good lunch. It's high energy. It's got lots of vegetables and got the protein that I need. Beans are good. Beans are have a solid place in your diet, just not for dinner. Grape juice is juice. That's just another one of the claims that they'll assign to stuff to get you to take it. And yeah, it does have antioxidants, but I submit to you that any fruit juice that you're drinking for any kind of vitamins or minerals or antioxidants, just get it from the parent fruit. And that's going to be better in fiber. Yeah, just eat some grapes instead. I saw something that kind of broke my heart about a year ago. I saw a mother and a son on a treadmill at the gym, and I'm doing my cardio, I'm running. And the son is probably 12 years old, and he's got a 12-ounce bottle of apple juice, and he's just walking on his treadmill. And his mom is, you know, you can tell that they're both trying to lose weight, so their heart is in the right place, and this kid is just choking down this juice like crazy, just throwing it down. And it broke my heart because he's actually consuming more calories in that juice than he's probably going to use up on that treadmill unless he stays on it for like an hour and a half. So do juices if you have to, just keep in mind what they are. They're concentrated fruits. And as far as antioxidants go, if you get a wide variety of whole foods, you're getting enough of the antioxidants. And I heard a guy said that to me the other day. He was talking about coffee. And he was saying, well, I drink coffee for the antioxidants. Yep. So I want you all to be really, really cautious when reading the labels. They'll advertise anything. And another one of the false labeling things, if there is less than half a gram of anything per serving, then they can round that down to zero. So a good example of that is you've seen these little spray bottles of I can't believe it's not butter, and it says 0 calories, 0 grams of fat, 0 all the way down the board, and like, you know, like 9 calories per serving or whatever. If you look at how many servings is in one of those squirt bottles, though, it's like 1,200. And what they've done is they take their whatever butter mixture it is that is butter, or hydrogenated oil that is flavored like butter, they've taken it and they've broken the serving size down enough that everything is less than half a gram, so they can advertise that it's zero everything on the label. So when you take that bottle and you squirt, 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 and you don't actually just give it one squirt, That's the same thing as taking some butter and going. Anything else? Jonathan? The supplement industry has exploded recently. It's a very profitable business now, and there are three different types of whey protein, and one of them is whey isolate, and it's especially designed to be processed very quickly by your body. And whey isolate protein is best used for right after your workout. If you do bodybuilding style workouts, you take it, and that way it signals to your body to take that protein and build up your muscles. Another one is whey concentrate, which is a slower digesting protein. And the other one is whey casein, which is the slowest of all digesting. So if you're looking for something to supplement for a meal, then you want either concentrate or casein. Because isolate, if you mix up an isolate shake and drink it on its own, you're probably going to be hungry within 2 hours pretty easily. Now let me say this. I take whey isolate all the time, and the way that I control it is if I need it for a meal, then I'll take it with a carbohydrate or something else to slow it down in my stomach. When you walk into a supplement store, you need to know what you're going in there for, because if you don't, they're going to grab you and they're going to tell you what you need, and you really don't need what they're going to tell you. So what you need is just a whey protein supplement with no added anything, and you don't need to ask anybody about it. You go and look, and it should be between 20 and 25 grams of protein per serving, and should be between 100 and 130 grams, or 100 to 130 calories per serving. So you find your protein supplement, and the two dominant things on there should be protein, calories. Protein should be between 20 and 25. Calories should be between 100 and 130. If it's anything else, if those values are higher or lower, it's not what you're looking for. Does that answer your question? There are tons of mixtures of proteins, and it's just the supplement industry trying to be creative and trying to drive more dollars out of your pocket. Melody? That is true. Coconut oil is a really good example of one of the fats that 10 years ago we would have shrieked at, and now it's a good thing. Coconut oil is a saturated fat, and it's good for it's healthy. It has a good role in your diet. It's high in monounsaturated fats, and use it for sautéing. You use it for whatever you want. It's good stuff. And it doesn't taste like coconut. It's pretty neutral. Olive oil is another good choice from a culinary student perspective. However, I don't like to cook a lot with olive oil, because if you heat it to a little bit hotter than it should be, the flavor deteriorates, and it can impart a musty, dirty flavor to your food. Or if you try to put it into brownies, it's not such a good thing. I don't know. All right, I'll take a couple more questions and we'll wrap it up. I'll do it. Anything else, guys? Y'all feel free to approach me anytime you want. Be happy to answer as many questions as I can. And I think I want to do a cooking demonstration for the next one. And we'll do it in the kitchen, and I'll show y'all some tricks on how to take good food and make it taste good without totally defiling its nutritional value.